Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
Not even a life-altering explosion can stop a hero during difficult times. Attend the opening ceremony at Firehouse World in February 2011 to hear Marine Corporal Joshua Blyle share about a bombing in Iraq that took both his legs. You'll leave motivated to face whatever challenges may come your way when you're out on your next call. Get complete details at firehouseworld.com.
Well, this month on Fire Marshal's Corner, joining us is Jim Crawford, who's talking about Vision 2020. He's the project manager. And if you haven't heard of Vision 2020, it's pretty much a landmark project that's really looking at helping to develop a national strategic agenda for reducing the loss, fire losses across the country through prevention and code standards and other activities. So there's certainly a lot going on there, and Jim is giving us a lot of information about what has been happening with Vision 2020 of late. And following that, we're talking with Acting California State Fire Marshal Tonya Hoover, who has formed a task group to look at the quite contentious photoelectric versus ionization issue that's really going on in a number of communities across the country. Some are passing ordinances specifying what should be used. And what the marshal has done is put together a broad task group of a number of diverse interests, taking a look at this and hopefully being able to reach a resolution on this issue, because there are many communities, many fire chiefs, many AHJs across the country that are looking for answers on this whole issue of what type of smoke alarm should I use and where should I use it. So that's going to be on this month's issue of Fire Marshal's Corner. Well, joining me on Fire Marshal's Corner is Jim Crawford, who's the project manager for Vision 2020. Appreciate you joining us, Jim.
It's my pleasure, Ed. I thank you for the opportunity.
Jim has been really working pretty aggressively on Vision 2020 for, I think it's, what, 3-4 years now? And I was wondering if you, and a lot has been happening, an incredible amount has been happening. So I asked Jim to come on and just kind of give us an update on where we're standing with this project these days. So, Jim, if you can just kind of maybe go through the strategies. There are 5 strategies that are a central part of this whole thing. Give me everybody an update and maybe where you're going to be looking at going next.
Okay. I think it would be good, Ed, to talk in terms of context that Vision 2020 started informally actually in 2006 with a meeting of interested folks in Florida at an NFPA meeting where we talked about the need for really a strategic planning process nationally. So as I've often said, and I know that you understand quite well, people misconstrue Vision 2020 as being an organization when it's really the name that we have given the plan that arose out of that planning process. And consequently, those of us who've been involved with the project have really made a commitment to try and generate action rather than just another plan that sits on the shelf. So under the auspices of this Vision 2020 plan, a variety of subgroups have come together. We call them task groups, and they've tried to produce action for each of the strategies identified, plus one of the core activities for Vision 2020, and that would be model performance measures for prevention programs. So I'll take them one at a time, and they're not in order of importance. So I'm hoping, Ed, that you'll jump in with questions if I've gone astray or to help clarify.
No problem. One thing I think is worthwhile mentioning, too, is that these 5 strategies came out of a meeting in Washington with a lot of people, too. So it's not just something that was pulled out of the air, was it?
No, not at all. In fact, it was the result of 13 different field locations, a national webinar where more than 500 people from around the country participated in the planning process and identifying gaps. It's important to say that they weren't talking about a true strategic plan, meaning take everything into account. They were talking about how to identify gaps in service so that those people who were interested in action could produce action, hopefully without reinventing the wheel that others were working on. Right. So 500 people in the webinars and another 170 actually physically gathered in Washington, D.C., in 2008 led to the production of the report on the five strategies, as you mentioned.
Okay. So strategy one.
Well, strategy one is about advocating for the importance of prevention outside the fire service. That task group has actually secured funding and is in the process of developing an advocacy toolkit. It's basically a how-to advocate for prevention programs. And I will say it simply. In fact, it's what my friend Wayne Powell taught me some time ago. You don't have any data, you can't demonstrate the problem. If there is no problem, there is no money. But putting it in terms of prevention programs and getting support for them, it's a matter of demonstrating what the problems are, how prevention fits into it, and how prevention programs produce results. So along the lines of providing not only some words that can be used nationally to support fire prevention, fire safety, life safety issues, it's also serving as a template for local departments to model in their own efforts. And we expect that that will be done here within another month or so and distributed around the country just as widely as we can, posting it online and so forth. So Alan Perdue of the IHE's Fire and Life Safety Section was the lead on that task group. Peg Carson, Peg Paul and Associates, and a number of task group members are working on that. Strategy two is about a national public education / social marketing campaign. We secured a little bit of funding to move that planning process further. It was really divided into two primary activities. One of them was to develop a national theme similar to Only You Can Prevent Wildfires or Everyone Goes Home, something that would work for the structural fire prevention environment. And that's because one of the groups at the forum in D.C., the large forum, felt that that was one of the gaps necessary to fill. The other group felt that there was a need to focus on working smoke alarms, and since we've been working on that with other efforts for Vision 2020, at least in my mind, it's been reinforced that working smoke alarms is potentially a huge problem in the U.S. Some high-risk areas that we're finding, for example, in Tucson with one of our other project partners, finding that only 10% of the homes have working smoke alarms. So I think the problem is huge, but the challenge for this task group working on Strategy 2 is to try and combine those efforts. And since then, because of other efforts as well, an additional focus on kitchen fire safety. So there's actually three parts to Strategy 2, taken one at a time. The first step is to try and develop a national theme. We funded a task group meeting in Baltimore this year where a number of partnering organizations came together, agreed that a national theme was possible, and outlined some preliminary steps to do that. So right now what we have is some staff work that's been done to identify potential market research companies and to get some preliminary budgets from them to outline exactly what it would take to produce a national theme and hopefully to get buy-in from a number of organizations so that we can start tagging our prevention messages with common terminology that captures the attention of not you or I, Ed, but our target audiences. Elderly, young, low-income, ethnic, it's quite a challenge, but it's really a process, a market research process to go through there. So we've taken first steps and are actively looking for funding to continue that process and get it done. The leaders in that one, I just say quickly, Ed, is I'm actively involved in that. Pam Powell, who used to be my boss at the U.S. Fire Administration for Public Education, Mary Kay Oppie with Now Safe Kids USA, and Shane Diekman from the Center for Disease Control, and Paul Schwartzman, the former chair of the PubEd section for NFPA, and a number of other folks.
Okay. Strategy 3 is really looking at the fire service side of it, and there's a lot of activity going on in that area, isn't there?
There's a bunch, and it actually arose from an initial partnership when Bill Kehoe from the Institution of Fire Engineers stepped up and said, I really have a passion for that topic. He was soon joined by Chief Ron Czarnecki and now both retired Victor Stagnaro from the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation. And they have been working collaboratively on a couple of different pieces. The National Fallen Firefighters have been focusing on model prevention programs, and the way that I describe it is really management models that help to raise the importance of prevention within the fire service. That's what Strategy 3 is all about. And they're focusing on community risk reduction programs in alignment with what the National Fire Academy teaches, and they have had some preliminary meetings to start outlining what those models, management models, really look like. In addition, Bill Kehoe has been working with a small task group, Frank Blackley, Steve Nash, I'm not doing justice because there are others and I apologize, but a group who are working on a model training curriculum for recruit firefighters. Their pinpointed problem was when we get them in the door, we really need to instill the value of prevention from the get-go, and we haven't been able to find anything out there that would serve as a national model for that training program. So that also ties in with NFPA 1001, the ProQual standard for firefighters, and some work that's being done by the task group to try and improve the amount of information that's available and the quality of information that's available for firefighters regarding prevention, community risk reduction, and what we're calling integrated risk management. That's the third piece, and we're actually partnering with a number of organizations, the Institution of Fire Engineers, the Washington Fire Marshals, the Arizona Fire Marshals Associations, basically nonprofit partners who've kind of risen up and said we have an interest in this topic, to apply integrated risk management concepts within the fire service around the nation. We have a number of jurisdictions participating: Portland, Oregon, Vancouver, Washington, Dallas, Texas, Wilmington, North Carolina, Tucson, Arizona, Philadelphia, Madison, Wisconsin, Amherst, Massachusetts, and Lexington, Kentucky at this point, and hopefully others, as well as a partnership with the Center for Disease Control on long-term studies that they are doing, all designed to get fire departments to focus on high-risk areas and conduct outreach activities that include home safety visits in one fashion or another, either with firefighters or with nonprofit partners, workload being what it is for many fire departments. Sometimes they can't, they don't have the time to go actually door-to-door, but they can partner with the organizations that do. So when they identify those high-risk areas, they're conducting home safety visits. As you well know, Ed, in your own area, I really liked your idea of using the iPads and showing safety videos as while you're in the home, as well as using it to collect data. I think that's something that we can explore some more. But the bottom line is getting the fire department to grasp the concept of our job is more than just responding. Our job is to manage risk. So whether we call it integrated risk management or community risk reduction or some hybrid of the two, that effort is moving forward in the field, and we're beginning to develop a national database that's impressive with the number of departments who are having experience. And we're going to use funding from this year actually for a national symposium on that very topic. It'll include all of the jurisdictions that I mentioned, plus a number of other practitioners from around the country. And hopefully in early March, we'll have a document that says these are lessons learned from what we have received so far. So that there's a ton going on for Strategy 3, as you pointed out.
And also Strategy 4, Dan Matrikowski from NIST has really been leading the charge on that one and taking a look at technology and kitchen fire safety.
He certainly has, actually. As far as a model for Vision 2020 goes, and I'll say it this way, Dan is kind of our poster child because as a leader for Strategy 4, which was all about using technology to improve prevention efforts, Dan at NIST assembled his task group and without any outside funding started moving forward. Their first round was to do some testing on suppression systems that would work with kitchen fires because they evolved as a task group to say we really need to focus on one of the principal fire causes in the U.S., and that's kitchen fires, cooktop fires, if you will. So that task group basically met and determined that there were a number of suppression systems that would in fact control a fire, not surprisingly a residential sprinkler system being one of the most effective. And that report, I believe, is available from NIST. But that led them to the conclusion, especially with a nonprofit partner, State Farm Insurance, that said, you know, they will suppress the fire, but we've still had a lot of damage in one of the most expensive areas in the home. Why don't we look at technologies that prevent or have the potential to prevent kitchen cooktop fires? That led to another symposium and a lot of work by the task group to identify technologies that could in fact work, including temperature regulating, high-end regulating devices for electric coil top stoves, thermocouples, motion sensors, timers. That task group is moving forward with some specific research. Dan and NIST provided some funding to the NFPA Research Foundation to do some study. They've hired a partner to do some additional review of research that is already out there. So, again, the group is not reinventing the wheel, but building on what's already been done. There's some field work on that high-end regulating technology. The only one I know of is pioneering technology at this point, but some field work being done to validate their findings on that. And the Consumer Product Safety Commission has also moved forward with plans to look at that and other technology independently. So with little or no funding from grant funds, that task group is moving forward, and Dan's leadership is greatly appreciated. Mike Love from the steering committee has joined him and kind of helping carry some of the burden there, because Dan's a pretty busy guy. So hope that does justice to it. Ed, there's a lot going on.
And then the last of the strategies, strategy five, is really trying to encourage firefighters to get involved in this code process. And I think we learned a lot of lessons out of the residential sprinkler issues going on right now in terms of the importance of firefighters being actively involved in that process, haven't we?
We have. That's another poster child, if you will. The work that Ronnie Coleman, Jeff Shapiro, and others did with regard to residential sprinklers kind of set a model for us about organizing folks to get behind priorities. But first and foremost, the work of Strategy 5, which is about increasing the use, adoption of codes and standards and the involvement of the fire service in them, has led that task group to the conclusion that what they really want to do is to establish a neutral, what's called a Codes and Standards Advocacy Council, a group made up of organizations and individuals that would work both within the ICC and the NFPA worlds to train folks about the value of and how to work within either system. And there's a ton of work already done by ICC and NFPA in that regard, and really reach out to folks and try and get them involved in that process. Personally, I think that there is value to something that Sarah Yerkes told me, and that is if you could get folks to work collaboratively, you could solve a lot of problems before they ever hit the floor, whether it's ICC or NFPA systems. So I think that CSAC is an opportunity for people to do that. And then on occasion, a priority will arise, I'm confident, Ed, where it's also an opportunity for different organizations to compare notes and say, we really should be working collaboratively on this particular issue. That group is going to meet in early February in Chicago. UL agreed to host a meeting there. So we'll see what comes out of that, but they are definitely moving in the direction of establishing a Codes and Standards Advocacy Council. We'll see how that comes out.
And then I guess finally is the model performances. You know, certainly a lot with the strategies, but another key part of it has been the model performance project that you're working on as well as part of Vision 2020.
Right. That's actually been developed now as a cooperative agreement between the Grants Office and the Institution of Fire Engineers, which is our host for Vision 2020, our nonprofit national host organization. And I will be the first to say that model performance measures have been around for some time, but a lot of fire departments that I know of aren't aware of them, don't speak in common tongue, if you will, about how to compare our programs and how to demonstrate the results that we're producing. There's an excellent course at the National Fire Academy on that topic, a couple of them actually, but the most recent that Gary Bassett and his group was working on, demonstrating the worth of your prevention programs. I'm not saying that exactly right, but it's a six-day course there. Goes into depth. Our cooperative agreement allows us to expand on those concepts and actually take them into the field. And the reason it's a cooperative agreement is because legally it allows the grants office and the fire administration to provide substantial involvement in the project without getting afoul of legal requirements that separates the fire administration and the grants program. So it can be a truly collaborative effort. That task group met just last week, actually, in Washington, D.C., and we're moving forward with five webinars on that topic of model measures, as well as 10 one-day workshops around the country. And by the time we're done, I'm confident that that will be even more, given the budget that we have and the time frame. So the point is, if we can get prevention programs around the country to speak in common terms, we can begin to compare notes one another. We can use that as criteria for what constitutes model prevention programs and start placing them somewhere where people can review them, a national clearinghouse or clearinghouse system, if you will. Both the fire administration and the fallen firefighters are very much interested in placing that information about who has a model program, who's demonstrated their results, online so that others can learn from it. So probably not doing justice to that one either, Ed, but hopefully people know by now that what came out of Vision 2020 and the plan has really resulted in a lot of people around the nation stepping up and saying we want to create action, and there's a ton of it going on.
Well, there certainly is a ton of it going on, and I see more references to Vision 2020 when people are promoting their programs or submitting grant applications. They're referencing the five strategies and such. So there's unquestionably a lot of buzz being created around what you pulled together here, Jim. And I think it's really the biggest thing is it's serving as an umbrella. And if people are looking, you know, Jim gave us a lot of information here today. There's a website you can go to, www.strategicfire.org, which has more information on all these strategies that Jim has been talking about and on Vision 2020. And with some links, too, where you can get in touch with Jim and others involved in the project if you want more information, you want to be involved. So we really appreciate you taking the time to join us here, Jim, today on Fire Marshal's Corner.
Well, it's my pleasure, Ed. Could I make one additional comment?
Sure.
If there's time, it really, I wanted to stress the point that there's a lot of other things that are going on nationally and regionally and locally with regard to fire prevention that I didn't mention. Efforts with the Fire Safe Cigarette, efforts for residential fire sprinklers, national campaigns that are underway for a variety of topics, all of the professional development work that's done by different organizations and the National Fire Academy. In short, what I'm saying is that Vision 2020 isn't all that's happening. I just want to do justice to the fact that we accepted taxpayer funds and we wanted to deliver something, so I tend to focus on that part of it. But there's a ton of other things going on, and people are due credit for that.
Yep. Well, appreciate that, Jim. So if you're looking for more information, go to the website. There'll be a link on the page here on firehouse.com that'll take you there as well, and we'll certainly have Jim back in the future to give us more of an update on what's going on, because it just seems like every week there is something more happening. So thanks again. We've been talking with Jim Crawford, who's the project manager for Vision 2020, giving us an update on that project, and we'll look forward to seeing you again in the future, Jim.
Thanks, Ed.
Firehouse World 2011 is the largest fire service event west of the Mississippi and takes place in San Diego, California, February 26th through March 2nd. Register today at firehouseworld.com and be part of the action. You will have access to over 100 training and educational sessions, 350 exhibitors, plus network with over 7,500 firefighters from around the country. This is one event you don't want to miss.
Well, joining us right now on Fire Marshal's Corner is California Acting State Fire Marshal Tonya Hoover. And I appreciate you taking the time to join us, Marshal.
Well, thank you very much for the invitation.
What the Marshal has set up is a task group in California to look at the whole issue of the photoelectric versus ionization question that's just going on all across the country right now. A number of communities have passed ordinances specifying what kind of smoke alarm to put in there. And there certainly is, to say the least, a lot of contention on it, isn't there?
Yes, there's opinions all over the place.
Yeah. I think I'd like to kind of start with, maybe you can give us a little history as to why you formed this task force, and then we can talk a little bit more about what it's going to be doing. So what was the genesis of it? What brought you about to start it up?
Well, as everybody knows, this is not a new subject. It's been going on for quite a while. And I think it would be safe to say that this subject has come up probably with most of my predecessors. Recently within California, there's been a number of jurisdictions that have moved to eliminate one type of technology over another. And so it became an item that was then moved to the state fire marshal's office here for opinions or expertise or advice or the potential for testimony. What we decided to do here in the office was then, as we've done in so many what we call hot topic items, is to form a task force group that could focus their energies, their background, their discussion points into one area, and that being the smoke alarm. And get recommendations to the state fire marshal that then the state fire marshal could decide how to move forward and actually hopefully give some guidance to jurisdictions that were looking at the issue.
Now, there certainly is a wealth of information and research out there. Is it a case of there's just too much and too disparate that you really kind of need to take a big, broad look at it? Or do you feel like there's more that is needed to look into this issue?
Well, I believe it's twofold. I believe that there is a tremendous amount of information out there, and that information spans 20 years. And sometimes in a technology age such as we have, a piece of information that was developed 15, 20 years ago still sits someplace in somebody's file and now on a computer that gets pulled out and used as what I'll call current information. Mm-hmm. Well, we all know technology has changed rapidly over just the past 5 to 10 years. And I think we need to pull the most current information. We need to pull the information that is, reproducible. And we need to be complete with that information. And I think what's happening on the second fold is because there's so much information, there are bits and pieces taken out of report. And then sometimes that's misused. It may be taken out of context by a reader or by a speaker who only has partial information. So here in California, our focus is to bring the best minds available to us together to use the most current information, testing, and technology out there, and address the issue today for California with the most recent available complete information.
So let's talk a little bit about the task group. What's the makeup? I guess they already had their first meeting. What happened at that, and where are you hoping to go with it?
Well, the task force group did have its first meeting. And again, we focused on the task force group concept because, as we all know in the fire service, task force groups are made up of multiple pieces, multiple pieces of equipment and expertise. And a task force group is brought together because of that, they're multiple disciplines, as well as they're a very focused group with a limited period to operate in. So we use the task force group as a limited group. They're focused for a limited period of time. In this particular case, the task force group has until June 1st, 2011 to complete their activities and move their report forward to the state fire marshal. This task force group is made up of fire service representatives, testing laboratories, building officials, industry, other local government, other state agencies that have a piece of this, as well as other stakeholders that may represent legislative groups or other industry manufacturers. So it's a very broad group.
About how many people are on it?
I believe we've got close to 20 folks, between 15 and 20 folks on this group.
Okay. And what happened at the first meeting?
Well, at the first meeting, they spent a lot of time on scoping the project. They did write their scope, their timelines, their meet and greets, talked about relative studies, laid the ground rules, which was very important to lay the ground rules for the task force group. It's like any committee or any group that gets brought together, you've got your forming, storming, norming. Mm-hmm. And they're in that forming phase. It was an opportunity for everybody to get to know each other, have their voices be heard, talk about who they represent, get everything out on the table.
Right. And what's happening going forward now? What are the next steps that are going to be happening?
Well, they have another meeting coming up in February. It is a two-day meeting. They will be providing some presentations. They'll be talking about some information that's out there and available. We've got a number of pieces of information that we will be posting on our website for the committee to review. They'll once again go back and take a look at their scope. They've worked through some of their key issues, so they'll be talking about their key issues and starting to pick away at those over the next few months as well.
So what are you hoping to have come out the other end? They go through this whole process, and what are you hoping to have sitting on your desk when it's done?
Well, what I'm hoping to have is that after the task force group comes together and they've reviewed all the information, they've identified, analyzed, and reported on their key issues, and they will then make recommendations to the state fire marshal on the particular topic of ionization versus photoelectric as it relates to residential structures. The state fire marshal then will take that report and that information and review it, ask questions about it, and then the state fire marshal has the opportunity to decide how to move that forward. Is it a matter of do we have to do anything? Is it a matter of changing regulation? Or is it a matter of enlisting the testing laboratories at changing their testing protocol to meet what California believes is their needs?
Mm-hmm.
What we're trying to do, and what I'm trying to do as a fire marshal, is allow the task force group to do their work and not get in the mix of that, because I'm trying to keep this process as pure. So that the information, should it be myself that it comes to, it's coming to me complete. I have no preconceived notions. Whatever comes out of the report, my interaction will be to go back to that task force group co-chairs and ask questions of that group to make a final decision.
Now, California is just one state out of 50, but obviously you're a pretty big, influential state. Are you hearing from your peers across the country? Are they interested in what you're doing there? Because, quite honestly, what you do, I could imagine, is going to have a pretty significant impact elsewhere.
Well, I have heard from a number of folks. I have heard from folks within the United States, and I've heard from folks across the waters. There are quite a few folks, whether it be at local, state, or national level, interested in what we're doing, why we're doing it, and wanting to be a part of the discussion, or how do they get information about the discussion. So, yes, I'm hearing from quite a few folks. But again, as I explained to the task force group in my opening comments to them on their first meeting, is I realize that a lot of folks are watching California once again, but my focus is on California and mm-hmm. what is right for California. So that they know that they may be getting a lot of information from a lot of other places, a lot of other countries, jurisdictions, states are doing other things, but this is about California.
Are these open to the public, these meetings?
Yes, they are. The meetings are posted on our website, and interested parties could attend. We have interested parties in attendance, and then we have our what would be classified as voting members when it comes time to vote. But the meetings are public. the information, the meeting notes, and any information that's disseminated at the meeting will be posted on the website, on the OSFM website, on our front page under Hot Topics. And by clicking that link, an individual can see what the committee has seen or what the task force group has seen.
And we'll put a link to your website here on firehouse.com. If you look below the podcast here, you'll see a link to your site. So people can easily find it and keep up to date on what's going on. So you said June is when you're looking for the completion of the report?
Right. We're looking for the completion of the activities of the task force by June 1st. I imagine it'll take a good part of the month for staff to bring all of that information together and formalize their report to the State Fire Marshal.
Well, we're going to be watching this with a lot of interest because, well, there is a lot of interest in this in the fire service. It's just something that really has been hanging out there, and there are a number of jurisdictions addressing it in different ways. And like you said, there's a lot of information, a lot of misinformation out there. So we'll be very interested in what does come out of your task force there. And I hope you'll come back and join us at some point in time to kind of give us an update on what's going on.
Always. It's always a pleasure.
All right. Well, we've been talking with Acting California State Fire Marshal Tonya Hoover about the task force that she has pulled together looking at the photoelectric versus ionization issue, which, as we've been saying, is just one that is quite contentious in some quarters and a lot of discussion on it. And really appreciate the fact that you are taking this on, and I think the service you'll be doing is a tremendous one, not only for California, but really, quite honestly, for the nation, taking a look at all this research and trying to render sort of a final, hopefully a final opinion on which type of smoke alarm should be used and where and how and everything else. So really appreciate the efforts that you're doing out there, Marshall.
Thank you very much.
Well, we had a good show here this month with Jim Crawford talking about Vision 2020 and Acting California State Fire Marshal Tonya Hoover talking about the photoelectric ionization issue. On both those topics, we're going to have a lot more information coming up in the future because there is certainly a lot happening. So stay right here, look what we've got on the page here on Fire Marshal's Corner, and we'll certainly keep you up to date on these issues. So my name is Ed Camo, and thanks for joining me this month on Fire Marshal's Corner.
The best way to learn a new skill or improve upon one you already have is to actually put it into practice. Choose from 6 hands-on training classes at Firehouse World 2011 in San Diego this coming February. Classes include trench rescue, firefighter survival, air management, extrication, and more. Learn by doing. Complete details available at firehouseworld.com.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these, or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.